Join me in the second chapter of John, the Gospel of John, chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. As you're turning to it, let me say it begins with the phrase, on the third day. And so anytime there's a text like that, that begins in that sort of way, it's a very reasonable question to wonder what happened on the other 2 days. And there is a series of passages just before this, what looks like 3 days already, where Jesus has been calling disciples. He calls, John baptizes him, and then he calls Philip and Nathaniel. And so, you know, there's a history here, but all of that is building up to this passage beginning with chapter 2, which is Jesus' first miracle as it's recorded by John the Evangelist. Listen to these words for the word of the Lord. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now standing there were 6 stone jars, water jars, for the Jewish rites of purification, each of them holding 20 or 30 gallons. And Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. And when the steward tasted the water that had become wine and did not know where it came from, though the servants who drew the water knew, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and then the inferior wine after the guests have been drinking. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. This, brothers and sisters, the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Even Jesus obeyed his mother. Some of you should too, maybe. And I'm not just talking to the kids. Jesus was a child, just like each of us. Well, not exactly like us, like most common children, but very much like us, except for his divinity. Big difference. But you know what? Each and every one of us has a little spark of that divinity within us. Something which we must accept and embrace, even cultivate. God's royal language in the creation story, "Let us make humankind in our own image." That's the royal "we," and that included us. God's "us" includes you. Yes, we create. We are creative. We are creators. But don't get stuck on that, because the focus is that we are made in God's image. And since God is a creator, that means we too are called to create. We create ideas. We create art, music. We create careers and children. We have a little help with that. And homes. We are created in the image of God, the Creator, and therefore we create. Jesus grew into this role, and so do we. On the occasion of today's text, we have the first manifestation of Jesus' divinity according to the fourth gospel, where Jesus turns water into wine. But he was reluctant to do it. Why? Other young saviors in his place might have been eager to stretch out and show what they could do. But Jesus was reluctant. But his mother knew his gift, and she called it out. It was almost like Jesus said, "Do I really have to?" The way John has it organized, this story begins Jesus' ministry. Though Jesus seemed reluctant, his mother called him out and others began to follow him from this moment on. Some other apocryphal gospel stories that didn't make the cut into Holy Scripture have stories where the young boy Jesus did miracles, like making little birds out of clay and then clapping his hands and having them come to life and flutter away. You can do a lot with divinity. You can do a lot with stories too. But that magical Jesus is not the Jesus we know, the Lord and ruler of the universe. Not the one who declined to use that power to save himself, but rather gave himself on the cross to be a ransom for people of like you and me for the forgiveness of sins and for making believers right with God. But while Christ the Redeemer is eternal, this Jesus, the boy, had a beginning. And we've just read it all during the Christmas season from the King James Version of the Bible. You know the phrases, "in those days," and "she brought forth a son and laid him in a manger." Kings and shepherds heard the Gloria in excelsis Deo and saw the star of wonder, star of light, and came to Bethlehem not just to see him, but to worship him. And then the story ends in a kind of to-be-continued fashion when it says, "And he grew in wisdom and stature and favor with God and humankind." You know there's going to be more. So it began. And this little boy grew up. It makes me kind of sad that not so many stories were recorded about his childhood, because most children, most kids, while they can be exhausting, are themselves miracle workers in some way. Well, they do change lives, anyhow. No one could dispute that. When a little one comes along, nothing is ever the same. But Jesus grew in the miracles, and no doubt continued to change lives more and more dramatically. Teaching the elders in the temple when he was only 12 years old. And now, with his mother's persuasion, changing water into wine for a wedding feast. These Middle Eastern wedding feasts could go on for days and days. And wine was what they served, you know. Most anything else would spoil in the heat with no way to keep it cold. And these families knew how to do weddings. They were all about hospitality. Still, Jesus was reluctant to take this on. But his mother pressed him to bail out the embarrassed host. She knew he could do it. Mothers can sometimes get something out of their kids. When I was a child, early on, I had been taking piano lessons, and I played the piano for church a couple of times. Small churches, mind you. It was at the insistence of my mother, who was always beside me. But on one occasion, she and I were sitting together in the congregation, and the pianist hadn't shown up. And she, subtly but briskly and without speaking, pinched me on the leg and motioned, "Get up there." I almost got a job. At first, it was just the Sunday services. And then later, it was Sunday evening and Wednesday night, and I got more and more. Not that it was a miracle or anything, but it was a little bit more than I was comfortable with. Mothers have their way with sons. And this mother, Jesus' mother, was pushing him, urging him, pinching him maybe, because she knew he could help. And he was saying, "My time has not yet come." But as miraculous and divine as Jesus was and is, he gave in to his mother. Maybe he went ahead with the miracle because he knew down deep inside that the time was right. This is a curious story. We have it only in this gospel, the Gospel of John. Not in the other three at all. And as you know, John was the last one to be written of the four gospels. The others, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, were written down in the middle of the first century, the 50s or 60s, that's A.D., with John's being a whole generation later, around 90. Yet John's is very different. John's is the only one which gives us this story, and he sets it at the very beginning, as though it is crucial to the initiation, the first appearance of Jesus' ministry. Jesus' mother calls him into action. That fact, Jesus clearly understood. When he said to her, "Woman, what has that to do with me?" The wedding feast, that is. He wasn't being rude or disrespectful. In fact, it may seem odd that he called his mother woman. We look at that, may hear that a little bit derogatory. But it's not in these times. And if you notice at the very end of John's gospel, it appears again when Jesus is on the cross and he recognizes that his mother's going to need some help, and he gives his mother away. He looks at his dearest companion, John, and he gestures to his mother and says, "Woman," there it is again, "woman, behold your son, and son, behold your mother." And then he breathes his last. If a young man today called his mother woman, probably he would be in some trouble. But here Jesus was using a common title of respect. And he addresses her in the holy moment of the crucifixion in the same way. Though he seemed to object to this miracle at first, Jesus gave in. And he proceeded to bail out the worried host and provide this miracle. It's recorded early, very early here in this Gospel of John. And we read that at weddings. You've heard it. As Jesus graced the wedding at Cana of Galilee, so may He grace your marriage. Protect your family and provide the joie de vivre, the joy of life and living in your home. But that joy of life does not come easy. We have to do our part, and we cannot just ask for free help every time there's a crisis, every time we run a little low on something. We do help one another, and we do that because of all that Jesus Christ has done for us. But all of life can't be an emergency. And if it is, then, well, we are not taking our own responsibilities very seriously. We are called not to do the miracle, but to bring the water. It's well worth noting that this miracle was not a free ride. Real miracles require some investment. When Jesus decided to proceed with His mother's urging, the miracle itself was still dependent upon crowd participation. Jesus said, "Go, fill the jars with water." And then He waited. There were, according to the text, 6 stone jars, each of them with a capacity of 20 to 30 gallons of water. Now, those were some large stone jars. I did a little calculation at 8 pounds per gallon. That's 160 to 240 pounds of water. And that does not count the weight of the jar, which itself had to be pretty substantial. Stone crock pot, made to hold 30 gallons. It probably weighed more than the water did. And not to mention that, but there were 6 of them. So Jesus told the host to fill the jars with water. Now you can imagine that that took a few hours. We know some time passed because those big heavy jars were even empty. They could probably be rolled down the hill to the water. But once they were filled with water, they had to be carried back. So some significant time passed, and some significant participation was necessary. We cannot ask for a miracle without doing our part. Bring in the water. The part of a disciple, a faithful disciple, is to bring the water. If I cannot live far enough ahead to be able to gracefully help someone else, then I am not living in the image of Christ, who has been incredibly graceful with me. In any moment, I or you may become the empty clay jar that Jesus seeks to fill. I'm reminded of the words that are attributed to Saint Teresa of Avila. "Christ has no body but yours, no hands, no feet on earth but yours. Yours are the eyes with which He looks with compassion upon this world. Yours are the feet with which He walks to do good. Yours the hands with which He blesses the world. Yours are the hands, yours the feet, yours the eyes, yours the whole body. Christ has no body but yours. No hands, no feet on earth but yours." If I cannot or do not tell the story, share the faith, then I am not living it. And it's exactly the same for you. For if you cannot or do not tell the story, then you are not living it either. We say the creeds, but do we live them? What miracles are you missing in your world because you didn't have the confidence or the faith or just thought the time wasn't right? Together, you are the body of Christ, and each one of you is a part of that body. There's a story, it may be a legend, it may be true, that during World War II, A church building in Strasbourg, Germany, was destroyed. After the bombing, the members surveyed the area to see what damage was done, and they were pleased that a statue of Christ with outstretched arms was still standing. It had been sculpted centuries before by a great artist. But taking a closer look, the people discovered that both of the hands of Christ had been sheared off by a falling beam. Later, another sculptor in town offered to replace the broken hands, to fix the statue as a gift to the church. The church leaders met to consider the offer and decided not to accept it. They felt that the statue without the hands was a great illustration that God's work is done through His people. Really, today in the church, we, you and I, are the hands and feet and voices of Christ. If Christ is to minister to the poor, it must be through our hands. If He is to take care of the sick, it must be through our hands and feet. If He is to reach out to those who are lonely, it must be through our hands, through our voices. You see something around you that Christ needs to take care of today? That you figure somebody ought to do something about? He has no hands now, except yours and mine. Where can you bring His healing, His power, His miracle, His grace? Do I have to? You might say. Yeah, you do. We do.